in Brazil, but Vettel and Barrichello could still keep the competition alive.
Brilliant drive.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Formula One, the world's greatest car chase, continues this weekend with the Brazilian Grand Prix, live across the BBC.
And now on BBC Radio 4, time for some more intergalactic hitchhiking as we continue our book at bedtime. And Another Thing by Owen Colfer.
Far out in the fringes of the dark nebula of Sulianus and Ram, there is a small planetoid that hangs on one of the nebula's curling tendrils, like a Christmas tree decoration. This tiny planet, Nano, succeeds in defying the pull of its star, chiefly because of the revolving dynamic core powering over 5,000 servo-mechanical thrusters. These ensure consistently temperate weather conditions and encourage life to flourish on the single continent, which is surrounded by its abundant number of fields, an abundance that is unusual in a planet that has never known an ice age. Anything can be real. Every imaginable thing is happening somewhere along the dimensional axis. How about this one? How about an ex-two-headed president of the galaxy who bought a tiny tropical planet from the Magrathians at a knockdown price, then sold it to rich Earthlings so that they could live on in comfort after their planet had been destroyed? How crazy would that be? The registered name of the continent on Nano is Inish Free, after the lake isle in Sligo Island on the recently vaporised planet Earth. The larger of the two towns is called Kong. These names have been selected by Nano's registration officer, a certain Mr. Hillman Hunter. Because Nano has been undeniably made by the planet-building Magrathians, Hillman Hunter has decided that a presiding god is needed to show men their place in the world, and ideally, that place would be far below his. So, on this particular Thursday, in a small conference room beside the town's municipal building, he was holding interviews for the position.
The town of Kong.
A huge anthropoid was seated uncomfortably in the interview room's chair, its grotesque, scaled torso squirming in the confines of the small seat. Hillman Hunter shuffled the pages of the creature's resume.
So, Mr. Cthulhu, is it?
Said the creature, tentacles dripping.
Good, said Hillman. Standard question here. Presuming your application is successful, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time?
In 5 years, I will have raised this planet, eaten its young, and stacked your skulls high in my honour.
Come on, Mr. Cthulhu! Skull stacking, do you think that's what gods do today? These are interstellar times. I have something highlighted here. Under current status, it reads, dead. Are you dead, sir? Because gods cannot die, that's the whole point. And as our advertisement did specifically say, we are looking for a grade A god. Certainly not someone who can die.
No callback, Hillman Hunter scribbled on the cover of Cthulhu's resume. Hillman was a positive kind of guy, but as if the god hunt wasn't trouble enough, he had to deal with all the strife from the other colony on Nano, who had started to worship the cheese. Staff were deserting the town of Kong in droves. Some days, Hillman felt like just staying in bed.
All you need is a nice cup of tea and a few biscuits,
Hillman said in a squeaky impersonation of his grandmother, a voice he often used to motivate himself.
Those people need you.
What Nano needed was a real-life god to thunderbolt discipline into its residents.
Guide note. The gods came into existence a few millionths of a second after the Big Bang, which basically means that they did not create the universe. Rather, the universe created them. Gods had a great time of it for millions of years, swanning across the sky in their chariots, being all wise and stuff. But then, science developed to the point where it could duplicate many of their tricks, blighting a crop, virgin births. In fact, many societies preferred virgin births, as they cut out the need for in-laws. Mortals, screw 'em, said the gods. So serious were the gods of Aesir about this vow that they surrounded their world, Asgard, with a shell of ice, leaving only one point of access, Bifrost the Rainbow Bridge, which was guarded by the all-seeing god Heimdall. Visitors were not encouraged. In fact, visitors were actively discouraged by ravenous flesh-eating dragons. Especially unwelcome was Galactic President Zaphod Beeblebrox, each of the dragons having been given one of his old shirts to sniff. The Heart of Gold.
Most people preferred to shut their eyes during improbability flights to shield their psyches from the impossibilities occurring around them, but Zaphod taped his open so that he wouldn't miss a thing. During the trip to Asgard, Diona Carlington-Husney, one of Zaphod's favourite singer prostitutes, broke through from the afterlife to sing possibly prophetic lyrics in hysterical falsetto.
Oh, Zaphod, baby, the fist is gonna fall!
Hey, thought Zaphod, my name in a song, Fruity.
Zaphod, my baby,
sang Diona.
You gotta climb that wall.
You look great, Diona. No decomposition or anything.
You're not listening, Mr. President.
I don't want to listen. I want to ask stuff. Do you get many sub-ether channels in the afterlife? I love celeb stalk. Do you get that?
Zaphod, baby,
continued Diona.
You gotta walk across that bridge.
How about alcohol?
You tell him what his secret name is, Zaphod, and he's gonna let you in!
Yeah, okay, bridges, whatever. But seriously, have you had something done? Because I think you look better now. Diona's eyes flashed.
Oh, for Zark's sake!
And so saying, turned into a nice sculpture of herself, which then proceeded to melt. Are we normal, LB? Left Brain's orb popped up from an electrolytic gel flask on the main console.
Who knows in an environment like this?
Excellent, said Zaphod, unstrapping himself from his flight seat. So, what do we got here?
Nerve crap, Prad. Thor's just a bag of nerves with a helmet on top after what you did to him.
That's why I want to talk to the boy, to explain, to make amends.
Amends, eh? Very well, Zaphod Beeble bastard. Come outside and let's talk about amends.
Into space? Won't that be cold?
Fear not, mortal. I will extend a bubble of atmosphere to you.
Just step outside, then.
Out you come, Zaphod. You have 1 minute to decide.
Zaphod sighed and straightened his coat. People like me, LB, the truly great ones, we are always alone. Left Brain nodded.
Yeah, that was good, but I wasn't ready with the lightning. Give me a second and then try it again.
Okay, something warm and not directly overhead. Makes my hair look thin. Left Brain interfaced with the ship's illuminations, putting a yellow spotlight on Zaphod's face.
Ready?
Zaphod nodded gravely, steepled his fingers, and spoke slowly. People like me, he began. Then Left Brain opened a tube and shot him into space. The Light God watched Zaphod spasm, counting down the seconds until he would have to choose between rescuing Thor's old manager or letting him die. But letting men die in the vicinity of Asgard was definitely frowned on by Odin, as martyrs had a tendency to live forever, which was ironic. Or was it paradoxical? Heimdall was a soldier and didn't crowd his brain with tricky terms. Hunt, kill, burn, flay. Those were the kind of words he liked, especially flay. But it was difficult to work into everyday conversation. Heimdall pouted for a moment, then reeled Zaphod in and landed him on the Rainbow Bridge. He was a big fellow, especially seen from directly below. Gazing up at a god's crotch can do wonders for a person's lack of low self-esteem.
You know the drill, Zaphod.
Not tasks. Come on, Heimdall, that's so oldie-worldy.
Three tasks, Beeblebrox, if you really want to talk.
I don't have time for three. Your tasks take forever. I'll do one.
Three.
One.
Then I'm just gonna kill you.
You're bluffing, big boy. I know the rules here. No one gets struck off the coil on Asgard without the big O's say-so.
Don't push me, because I'll call him.
Yeah? Odin could be enjoying a nice horn of honey mead, and your call might make him drop it, then... Holy Zark, it's Ragnarok!
Heimdall punched in a number on his horn's keypad and hummed his way through a few seconds of ringing.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, Odie, it's me, he said into the horn. Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, I know mead stains. Freeze your shirt, and then the mark comes right out. Listen, I got someone here, a mortal. I just want the go-ahead to kill him.
Zaphod drifted away from the conversation. As a child, he had been diagnosed with ADHD, D-A-A-A, D-H-D, open bracket, N-T-M, close bracket, A-B-T, which stood for always dreaming his dopey days away, also attention deficit hyperflatulence disorder, brackets, not to mention, close brackets, a bit thick. Even as an adult, Zaphod could not manage the condition because he could never remember what he suffered from. So, even though Heimdall and Odin were discussing his immediate future and the amount of discomfort contained therein, Zaphod found himself distracted by the twinkly lights of Asgard. It was an amazing sight, even for one accustomed to the shiny of wide, wonderful space. Heimdall was saying something.
Hmm? Said Zaphod. I got the green light, said the god, smiling happily. I'm gonna flay you.
Oh, said Zaphod, what about the tasks? There must be a golden axe somewhere you guys need me to find.
You wanted one task, said Heimdall. That's exactly what you're getting.
Good, great. Can we get on with it then? I'm freezing.
It's a simple task, said Heimdall innocently. All you need to do is cross the bridge.
Cross the bridge, Zaphod thought. That sounds familiar.
If you make the first wall, you need to climb it.
I gotta climb that wall. Familiar.
So, cross and climb, got it. And no hidden tricks.
Apart from the dragons trying to tumble you into the abyss, no.
Heimdall adopted a heroic stance, raised his horn, and blew a long, undulating series of notes that sounded suspiciously like the old Beetlejuicean nursery rhyme, Arkel Schmarkel sat on a schmed, but with a semitone more implied violence. Zaphod felt a chill in the scar tissue where his second neck used to be, and turning on the spot, he ran like blazes through the tube of false atmosphere across the so-called Rainbow Bridge.
And Another Thing by Owen Colfer was abridged by Penny Lester and read by Stephen Mangan with Peter Serafinovich. It was produced by Heather Lama. Episode 5 of And Another Thing continues at the same time tomorrow night here on BBC Radio 4. Where the news is next, and then we invite you to delve once more into the obscure and unruly world of taxis. The second series of pickups charts the lives and loves of private hire company Irwell Cars, somewhere up in the Wild West. Northwest, that is, the outskirts of Manchester. Pickups in a couple of minutes.
Raised his horn and blew a long, undulating series of notes that sounded suspiciously like the old Beetlejuicean nursery rhyme, Arkel Schmarkel sat on a schmed, but with a semitone more implied violence. Zaphod felt a chill in the scar tissue where his second neck used to be, and turning on the spot, he ran like blazes through the tube of false atmosphere across the so-called Rainbow Bridge.
And Another Thing by Owen Colfer was abridged by Penny Lester and read by Stephen Mangan with Peter Serafinovich. It was produced by Heather Lama. Episode 5 of And Another Thing continues at the same time tomorrow night here on BBC Radio 4. Where the news is next, and then we invite you to delve once more into the obscure and unruly world of taxis. The second series of pickups charts the lives and loves of private hire company Irwell Cars, somewhere up in the Wild West. Northwest, that is, the outskirts of Manchester. Pickups in a couple of minutes.